Jamaica, Jamaica. Ooh, I wanna take
it. Every time you say Jamaica, that's what I think of.
Aruba, Jamaica. Ooh, I want.
The American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory.
We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Low Bros History Podcast. We are your hosts, Henry Lowe.
And I'm Jacob Lowe.
Today we're going to have some fun discussing the life of Genghis Khan, or Chinggis Khan, and the duration of the Mongol dynasty. We will provide you all with a brief bio on Genghis Khan and how he united the Mongol tribes to create the first Mongol dynasty, as well as breaking down the brutality of the Mongols, making them the most feared warriors in ancient history. With this discussion on brutality, we also will discuss the leadership of Genghis Khan and how he should be remembered as a visionary leader that helped globalize the ancient world through the various trading routes known as the Silk Road, which led to the spread of ideas, religious freedom, and innovations that benefited society. Jake, how's it going?
I'm doing good. New year. Hopefully it's going to be better than the dumpster fire that was 2020.
The dumpster fire.
Although it's not looking looking too good. I just have a tip: stay away from the news, people. Don't
stay away from the news.
Stay away from the news.
Listen to the history
listen
podcast.
Listen to us.
Listen to our voices.
Let our soothing voices guide you through the turmoil of
Jake's
this
got
year.
The. All right.
Yeah, we'll do a meditation podcast.
We're going to start a calming podcast after this. So, Jake, you doing good?
Yeah, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's been a breezy week. Looking forward to this all week.
Yeah.
I look forward to our Thursday shows.
Yeah.
It's a fun time.
I do too, man. I'm really like a kid at Christmas, just waiting, you know.
I couldn't sleep last night.
Yeah. I haven't slept in 5 days.
I haven't slept in a week. All right, so we're moving on. Let's start off with our icebreaker.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So let's go, Jake.
So when people talk about the Mongol Empire, what is the first thing that comes to your mind? Is it Genghis Khan, or is it the fierce Mongol horseback warriors, or is it just the sheer size of the empire at its height?
Yeah.
So what would be the first thing when I say Mongol Empire? What's the first thing that comes to your head?
Not trying to be stereotypical, but
yeah,
I mean, I don't know. You know what I was thinking about today was the the orcs from Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's kind of a weird thing to bring up, but for some reason that's what I thought.
careful.
No, well, just like, you know, like just how, like, you know, when you think about the army and who they were and the sheer brutality, you know, it's kind of like the first thing that comes to mind. Just like, you know, I was like kind of like villainous in the way that they conquered and just the brutality of it all. And
yeah,
you know, obviously, you know, we were talking about Mulan, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of paints the Mongols in a very, very dark, sinister way.
Yeah.
That's not 100% accurate, but no. At the same time, like, that's the first time I ever even
heard of the Mongols. The grip of terror and the reputation of terror.
The reputation of terror. That's kind of what I mean.
That they projected. But as we'll come to see later in the podcast, that they were actually, as a society, very different from how they're portrayed in movies. And,
yeah.
You know, for me, you know, when you say the Mongol Empire, I just think of like a, you know, kind of how people felt back during the Cold War, you know, all these T-34s just coming over the hill.
Yeah.
I just see all these Mongol horsemen, warriors just coming over a hill, just charging at you. And
yeah,
I also think of like the sheer size. It's the largest continuous land empire in history.
Yeah, and that I actually didn't know either.
Yeah, and you know, yeah, how, you know, Genghis Khan or Chinggis Khan, which is not his name. That's his title.
That's his title, and I did not know that either. Yeah,
that's his title. His real name was Temujin.
Temujin.
And, yeah, the sheer size of it and just how, you know, these nomadic, you know, tribes living on in the Asian steppe, you know, became so organized so quickly in such a brief period of time, and then took over most of the world. And also that Genghis Khan has today over 16 million direct living descendants.
Yeah, and that's like absolutely insane.
Yeah.
16 million descendants. So yeah. we're all related to Genghis in some way or another.
He was a great lover.
He was a great lover.
A great man.
He was a great man. Like you know, they say like Thomas Jefferson, like so many people are related to him or something like that.
Yeah.
And well, I don't know where they get that.
Well, Thomas Jefferson had, you know, like 16 illegitimate children with his slave.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like Genghis Khan. He just, every place that he conquered, he like collected women like baseball cards.
That's insane.
You know?
That's a crazy way to think of it, too.
I mean, like, sorry, ladies. Sorry.
Different time.
I mean, different time.
Different time.
You know, it just, in the way that, you know, I mean, saw a beautiful princess and just was like, hey.
It's kind of like a trophy for, like, taking the nation, almost.
Yeah, it's, yeah, back then it back was considered then, a spoil of war.
The spoils of war. Yeah. The great spoils of war.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I just think that's, That is really what you think of, though. You think of the brutality. You think of, but you know what you really don't think about, and what we're going to talk about today is, you know, we're not going to pass over the brutality, but at the same time, like the Mongols revolutionized the ancient world.
Yeah, they did a lot. They did a lot to connect. You know, I mean, we're talking about like a time. This is like back during the Middle Ages, going on, and people back then wouldn't travel less than 5 or 10 miles and live 5 or 10 miles outside of their original place of birth.
Right.
So for the most part, people are could be living miles away from each other, living, you know, completely different lives, completely different customs and religions, you know.
Not even too far from.
Not even too far from one another. And
yeah.
Wouldn't know.
Right.
You know, and yeah. That's kind of what he just kind of like, I think that's kind of like inadvertently like what, well, no, purposely too, you know, kind of connected, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of people because, you know, the nomadic tribes of Mongolia, they're varied too.
Right.
You know,
Kind of like the tribe. I mean, I feel like we bring it up a lot, but the tribes of the Native Americans in the United States,
yeah.
in, you know, early America, all the different Native American tribes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you could be one tribe, do your thing one way, and then go, you know, 5 or 10 miles down the road, and you meet another tribe.
Yeah.
Doing a completely different thing. Not trying to be vague, but, you know, like, kind of they're just doing all kinds of. Stuff varies between tribes.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into it, and we're going to start off a little bit with some bio. I mean, just for some people who don't even know who Genghis Khan was, you know, I guess one thing that we want to get into is how did he start? What was his early upbringing? And
yeah.
He had a pretty crazy childhood.
Yeah, so Temujin was born in 1162, around the border of modern-day Mongolia and Siberia, and he grew up in a very violent world.
Right.
from the moment he was born, he, you know, because all the tribes, you know, on the Asian steppe, they would constantly, like, be attacking one another, you know, stealing from one another, engaging in conflict after seemingly endless conflict.
Right.
And it was very unpredictable, very unstable of an environment to be in. You didn't know if you were safe or not, you know, if your family was safe. Kidnappings would happen, you know. It basically, it was the Wild West.
Pretty much, dude.
You know, anything went. And
kind of a lawless society.
Yeah, and there was no, the point I'm saying is there was no stability early on in his life.
Right.
He was born into an noble.
Like aristocratic.
Aristocratic. Thank you. Words are hard, man.
Words are hard.
And his father, so Temujin was like 9 or 10 years old.
And Temujin, for people who don't know, that's Chinggis Khan.
That's his
real
name.
That's his
real
name.
That's his real name. But I guess for the rest of the podcast, we can just refer to him as Genghis.
Right,
Genghis
yeah.
Khan. So when he was 9 or 10 years old, his father marries him off to his first wife. I hope I'm pronouncing it Borta.
Borta.
Yeah.
Really rolls right off the tongue.
Borte.
Borta.
Yeah,
rolls right off the tongue.
I don't know.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
But, and then, you know, during the wedding ceremony, his father is poisoned and killed. And Genghis Khan is and his family are completely thrown to the wolves at the mercy. His own tribe abandons him.
Mm-hmm.
And they end up for the next couple of years living in poverty, roaming around. At one point, he was taken enslaved a couple of different times, and
to like a rival tribe.
Yeah, to a rival tribe. You know,
right.
So from very early on, he kind of had to be the man of the house and do what he could.
Grow up pretty quick. He had to grow up pretty quickly.
Yeah, because he had his family to feed.
Yeah.
And they were just poor, just really, really poor.
Right.
And, but, 1178, Genghis Khan marries his first wife, and then later she's kidnapped by a rival tribe.
Gosh. So kidnapping was a common thing between tribes.
Yeah.
Was kidnapping. We'll kidnap your wife, kidnap your kids. And
yeah.
It's just like such a terrible way to grow up.
But it's during this time that he hatches a plan to rescue his wife. And by doing that, he's making alliances with other tribes. He's building his reputation as a great warrior. And even amassing followers,
right,
to rally to his side. He ends up getting her back, and then he kind of disappears from recorded history for a period of 10 years, and then reemerges. And the reason why, what we know about Genghis's childhood comes from a Mongolian text called The Secret History of the Mongols.
Yeah, dude, this I didn't know
that.
Which
was written after his death.
The Secret History of the Mongols, dude, that is crazy.
So, you know, these are the Mongols were highly nomadic, you know. They would be on the Asian steppe. You know, it's kind of like the American Native Americans.
Right, exactly.
You know, on the Great Plains, they would just move around, you know, set up camp and then move around, set up camp. You know,
yeah,
and that's just the way it was. There were no cities, no
right,
nothing.
And it kind of plays into later when we talk about their military tactics and how mobile they were as an army.
Yeah, they're
in a fighting
mobile.
Force. I mean, they were so used to being, boom, on
and,
the move,
and horses were key.
Yeah.
Very valued. From the time a Mongolian child was 3 years old, they would be trained to ride a horse.
At 3 years old?
Yeah.
It's a different breed.
So they were expert horsemen.
Yeah.
You know, they were trained at 3 years old and then go on and they, you know, they lived on their horses.
They lived on their horses were their livelihood.
Yeah, their horses were a part of them.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. Kind of like a man and his motorcycle.
Yeah, man in his Harley.
Man in his Harley.
Yeah. So, but then he reemerges along with his... So he reemerges with his best friend, Jamukha.
Jamukha.
Who they...
This
they,
is not the inspiration for the Jamukha shake at
at Arby's.
Jake is...
Hashtag Arby's. Dude, the Jamukha shake, though, in all honesty...
The Jamukha shake is something to die for.
Yeah, to die for. And they created their own tribe. Because, like I said, you know, years before, Genghis's first tribe abandoned him after the death of his father. And they began attacking, you know, their neighbors, neighbor tribes. And but sometime later, they have a falling out. And
Jamukha and Genghis, right?
Jamukha and Genghis.
Okay.
Because there were two different... they had two different ideologies. So Genghis was revolutionary in the fact that he went against Mongol custom and didn't choose relatives or nobles to lead his forces. Instead, he put competent, loyal, and skilled allies in key positions of power to lead his army. Whereas Jamukha, he was more traditional and gave, you know, command, you know, some of his generals command of some of his army, some of his forces to relatives, nobles.
So, like, based off status and...
Yeah.
Okay.
And then in 1187, Genghis Khan's popularity is on the rise. He's amassing more and more followers. And Jamukha attacks Genghis out of fear that he would become too powerful, you know, and become the next Khan.
The person he actually becomes.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And early enough, Jamukha defeats Genghis.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know, he defeats him, but Genghis, you know, retreats, you know.
Right.
And reemerges with an army and then goes after... well, he doesn't actually go after Jamukha. He just reemerges with an army and decides to lead his army in a campaign against the Tartars.
The Tartars.
Who were allied with the Jin dynasty. And
this is this the dynasty of China at the time?
Well, China had, much like back then, much like the Greek city-states, had different kingdoms.
Okay.
That split apart. And the Jin dynasty was like in northern China.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Their capital, was under a different name, but their capital is now Beijing.
Okay, gotcha. Today. Okay.
So, the Tartars and the Jin dynasty are allied together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's said that the Tartars actually were the ones that poisoned Genghis's father.
Oh, wow.
So he decides that he's going to attack them first.
So the Tartars are definitely going down.
Yeah, oh yeah. First on the hit list.
First on the hit list. The Tartars. You can't make this stuff up.
Yeah. So it was in this campaign that Genghis Khan ends up defeating the Tartars and kills all the leaders. But he doesn't kill everybody. Instead, the rest of the Tartar tribe, you know, are assimilated into his own.
Okay, and there we go with another common theme that we're going to see when we talk more about Genghis and how he orchestrated newly conquered nations and how he assimilated them into his tribe instead of decimating them completely.
And even more so, to gain their trust, he promised the soldiers and civilians alike a portion of the spoils of war.
Okay.
So he shared it evenly. But he also put in place a custom that hospitality was sacred.
Okay.
That no envoys, no guests could be harmed in any way.
Right.
And this would be like a big pet peeve for Genghis. If he sends an envoy and you kill him,
he's coming after you full force. But I mean, that's like literally like a slap in the face. I mean, to anybody, let alone, you know, Genghis Khan. So I mean, certain cultures, especially, I've noticed, I mean, I could be wrong, but I mean, I've noticed, like, you know, some of those Eastern cultures, hospitality is huge, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, when you think about it from Genghis's perspective, you know, he's sending an envoy. It's almost like an act of mercy. It's like, I could have, like, just destroyed your whole city, but I'm sending people to, greet you.
Yeah, and it mirrors Alexander the Great before.
Yeah.
You know, how he would always try to conquer these cities through diplomacy first.
Right.
And then, you know, if he didn't want to take it,
you're lost.
You're done. Game on.
Play ball.
So in 1201, the leaders of the tribes against Genghis Khan decide to elect Jamukha.
Jamaica. Ooh, I want to take it. Every time you say Jamukha, that's what I think of. Aruba, Jamukha. Ooh, I want.
So they elect him the universal Khan of the Mongols. And I hope I'm pronouncing this right, but these political elections were known as a Kurultai.
I've heard about that.
Which is basically all the tribes get together, all the Khans of the different tribes, because the Khan was like, you're the chieftain of that tribe.
Right.
And then they would all get together in one place, and then they would elect a like one Khan to lead the rest of the Khans.
So the Mongolians are uniting under one Khan.
Yeah. And they're backing Jamukha.
They're backing Jamukha.
Yeah, they're not backing Genghis. Okay. They're backing Jamukha. And this leads, of course, to civil war between Jamukha and Genghis Khan.
Right.
But Genghis Khan defeated Jamukha in the autumn of that same year, 1201.
Mm-hmm.
But Jamukha was able to escape with a good portion of his army.
Okay.
And then in 1204, the two would meet again.
Oh, okay.
But Jamukha again was defeated, but again he escapes.
And then, he's a crafty one, that Jamukha.
Yeah, man. And then he goes into a period of he goes into hiding for a period of time before he's captured by Genghis's followers.
Okay.
And handed over to him. Now, again, in an act of mercy, Genghis offers Jamukha a chance to renew their alliance as blood brothers. They're like, they're best friends, but they consider themselves blood brothers.
Right.
But Jamukha refuses. And instead, Jamukha asks Genghis for a noble death by killing him without spilling his blood.
Okay.
And it's going to get graphic.
Right.
Warning. Genghis Khan agreed and executed Jamukha by breaking his back in 1205.
Wow. Well, first of all, I'd rather you just cut my head off.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go ahead and say that. I'm not really on board for the whole not spilling blood. It seems like a little bit easier to just drops, but it was kind of a, you know, sign of honoring him in a way.
Yeah.
In a weird way, he was honoring his wishes by, you know, not spilling blood, because it was looked at as kind of like a super negative thing. And I did hear that Genghis, Jamukha's men or something, they did some kind of act of disloyalty towards Jamukha, and Genghis killed all of Jamukha's generals, mm-hmm. like, pretty badly. I don't really know exactly what he did, but I think
one of the techniques was they would tie each limb to a horse and then slowly have the teams of horses, like, pull your limbs apart.
Okay.
So they, again, that's pretty graphic. Sorry.
It's a different time.
Different time. It's a different time where you just say, hey, princess, you're coming with me, and we're going to have a bunch of children, and... Oh, yeah, by the way, I'm going to break the backs of all these people over here. And
then pull his limbs off.
Yeah,
and then we're going to go have dinner like it didn't happen.
Yeah, we're going to go have dinner, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, a different time. So Jamukha and Genghis's relationship is officially over.
It's officially over.
And Genghis becomes supreme ruler of Mongolia.
Yeah, that's in 1205. He's defeated all of his rivals, and he proclaims himself Chinggis Khan. But in the West, it becomes Genghis Khan.
Yeah. And then if you're like me the past 10 years, you're calling him Genghis.
Yeah.
That's what I thought he was for the longest time,
yeah.
Genghis.
Yeah.
But he's actually Chinggis Khan. Chinggis.
Which roughly translates to universal ruler.
Okay. So it's just a title. Yeah. Emperor.
It's not.
Mr. President.
Yeah. It's not his...
Mr. President.
Yeah, it's not his name, and that's like what people confuse. That
I thought his first name was Genghis and his last name was Khan.
Yeah,
that's what I thought.
No,
okay,
no.
So that's totally wrong.
Yeah.
So we laid the background for some of his early life and his military accomplishments in Mongolia and how he became. And this is a big deal. I mean, he became the first unified ruler over all of Mongolia.
And literally created the nation of Mongolia. Back then it was a little bit smaller than it is now, but
okay.
He basically founded it.
He founded the nation of Mongolia.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, and then once he finds the nation of Mongolia, I mean, like, the reputation just, like, continues. And it's where he really starts to unleash and spread Mongolian the armies throughout the nation and begins conquering.
Yeah. And he did some things before he went conquering.
Okay.
So he unites the Asian, the tribes of the Asian steppe, founds Mongolia.
Yeah.
And he began work on creating some new laws. So the
first law
is he abolishes inherited titles. He forbids the kidnapping of women and children.
Mm-hmm.
He bans the enslavement of any Mongol.
Okay.
And made livestock theft punishable by death. He also ordered the creation of a writing system.
Okay.
Conducted a regular census and granted diplomatic immunity to foreign ambassadors and allowed religious freedom before the concept of religious freedom was ever a thing.
Yeah, that was unheard of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you look at his army back then, just religiously speaking, he had a lot of Christians, a lot of Muslims, and a lot of Buddhists in his army.
A little bit of everybody there.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's got an interesting quote that I found. I kind of dug up some quotes, and, you know, because he really starts out with governing, you know, and before the conquering and before the, you know, spreading, he starts with really ratifying a lot of the customs and, you know, customs of the time. Mm-hmm. So he's got a quote, says, "Conquering the world on horseback is easy. It is dismounting and governing that is hard."
Yeah.
And we've talked about that before. You know, it's one thing to conquer the world and have a large army, but it's a whole other thing in and of itself to govern all those people.
Yeah.
Without it being complete anarchy.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. Giving rules and laws and customs and things that to appease people.
Right.
You know, because like I said, you know, like back when Genghis was growing up, kidnappings were common. It was near constant conflict with tribes. There was no stability. And then all of a sudden, he rises to power, and then there's stability.
And this
not
is,
only stability, but there's a new nation.
Yeah. And all those things that he established, all those laws were in order to keep things like kidnapping. And, you know, we talk about Genghis Khan, and just like we were talking about in the beginning, the brutality of Genghis Khan, the evil of Genghis Khan. But, you know, I mean, I don't think anyone would really disagree with any of those laws that he established.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he actually was a really great leader.
Yeah.
You know, even from an early time, you know, unifying the nation of Mongolia.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. So after that, Genghis, Genghis leads his first official campaign as Genghis Khan on against the Zhizha Kingdom.
Zhizha.
I hope I'm pronouncing that right. If there's any Chinese speakers, sorry.
Or Mongolian historian experts.
Mongolian, yeah.
Zhizha.
So the Zhizha Kingdom.
And that's China, right?
It's like country like outside, just a little bit outside of the Jin dynasty.
The Jin, okay, gotcha.
Because the Jin controlled northern China, and they pushed out the Hong Song dynasty.
Okay.
And then they had to flee to the south.
Okay, gotcha.
So, yeah, it's basically what happened.
All right.
So first he begins by ordering raids.
Okay.
You know, just go out raiding, kind of getting a feel for the area and...
just get warmed up a little
just
bit.
Just get warmed up, you know.
loosen up the muscles a little bit.
Yeah,
Burn some villages down.
Yeah, exactly. But, and then 1209, he launches a major force against the Zhizha army.
Okay.
And in these engagements with the Zhizha army, I hope I'm saying that right.
It's all right. don't worry about it.
One of his signature tactics was known as the feint retreat. The feint or false retreat. So he would attack his enemy with a small force.
Okay.
You know. And then, you know, once they were engaged, you know, so he would take a small force and engage a larger force.
Yeah.
And then he would give a signal. They retreat.
And it kind of made them look a little bit more smaller than the enemies thought.
Yeah, yeah. And they would retreat. But before this, he would, you know, take his much larger force and, like, put it, like, somewhere else.
Right.
And then so as the army is chasing them,
yeah,
you know, on horseback, they would lead them.
Into a trap.
Much bigger force.
Yeah.
And surround them. And it's kind of like Hannibal's tactic. You know, except it's not as mobile as Genghis's.
Genghis was on a whole nother level.
Yeah, yeah. The Mongol army was a highly mobile army. It was mostly cavalry.
Right.
You know, and they would be equipped with a curved sword, a shield,
and then a
composite bow.
Composite, okay.
Yeah.
In
a composite or recurve bow.
I think recurve
would be better.
And yeah, I mean, it's
design.
Yeah, and well, I mean, you know, it's going back to that same military tactic. We want to fight where we want to fight. We don't want to fight where everyone else wants us to fight.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're going to be moving, shape-shifting all over the place.
Yeah.
And we're going to make you chase us. And rule number one, don't chase the Mongols.
Yeah, exactly. That's what they want you to do.
That's what they want you to do.
So using this tactic and, you know, stuff like that, he pushes back the Zhizha army back to the capital. Well, but it was in this campaign that Genghis Khan realized the importance of siege warfare.
Right.
Now, they didn't really have siege equipment at this time, but they would later.
Right.
Later. Especially when they start getting into the Middle East and, you know, and using catapults and things
like that.
But, you know, when we talk about besieging a city, you have two options. One, you can attack it without any siege equipment, and risk losing your army.
Yeah.
Or you camp outside of the city and wait and starve them out.
So you basically trap them within their own walls and
yeah,
just play the waiting game. Kind of like Ulysses S. Grant at Vicksburg.
Yeah, yep. And just wait until, you know, everything is, until they're done.
Right.
And they ended up surrendering and presented Genghis Khan with tribute.
Okay.
And then after that campaign, Genghis Khan then attacked the Jin Dynasty in northern China. Again, first ordering raids into the Jin territory.
Get the blood flowing.
In 1211. And this was after the Jin Dynasty had demanded Genghis Khan and the Mongols to surrender.
Okay, so...
Yeah. So he didn't attack them, like... Well, I mean, yeah, he engaged them first, but diplomatically speaking, the Jin Dynasty engaged them first.
Right. But he gave him a heat check.
Yeah, he's like, hell no, I'm not...
Who the heck are the Mongols? Who? Yeah. Ching what? Genghis?
Yeah.
Genghis?
So again, he orders raids into the Jin Dynasty's territory in 1211. And then from 1211 to 1215, the Mongols continued to raid the countryside, leaving just a trail of destruction wherever they went.
Yeah, and the thing I was learning about when he raids the countryside, it's a smart tactic, first of all, because you get to conserve resources and attack the small places. But at the same time, it's going back to that psychological warfare of breaking the will of your enemy.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like here's these Mongols that just come out of nowhere, and they're having their way in your territory, doing whatever they want. Again, much like Hannibal versus the Romans.
Right.
You know, he invades Italy, and he's just doing whatever he wants to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was kind of reading on a whim this week about the Sherman's March to the Sea, and how he was... The whole goal of that campaign was to break the will of the enemy, you know, and just, I mean, that's a whole nother story, but at the same time, the same idea, you know, I mean, they're just burning every city all the way down to Atlanta. Not Savannah, though. Come to Savannah.
Yeah.
So Savannah did not get burned down because it was so beautiful. But,
so beautiful.
You know, Mongolia, they just kind of played to that same tune a little bit, burning all the...
Yeah.
Countryside.
I want to make a small correction. It's that in the Jin Dynasty, their capital was I gotta find it.
If anybody wants to check us out,
Zhongdao, which is Beijing.
Zhongdao,
no. Beijing. That was the Jin. Sorry, that was my bad. I thought it was the Zhijia, but that's not it.
the Zhijia.
That wasn't their capital. But yeah, that, you know. He orders raids, and then from 1211 to 1215, you know, like I said, they're continuing to raid. And then eventually, later in 1215, Genghis Khan orders his Mongols to besiege the city of Zhongdao, which now is Beijing.
Yeah.
But due to food shortages, because again, like I was saying, like, you know, they don't really have siege equipment at this time to take on the walls. The best thing that they can do is just camp outside their city and, you know, disrupt their supply lines.
Yeah.
Like food, resources from getting into the city.
So kind of be a little smarter with what he has at the time.
Yeah. And then due to food shortages, the Jin leaders surrendered and paid tribute to Genghis Khan, handing over large amounts of silk, silver, gold, and horses.
Silk.
But, and everything was good. Everything was good. Genghis, you know, assimilates the Jin people and the Jin dynasty into his own growing empire. But the Jin ruler eventually moved his royal court south of the city, south to the city of Kaifei. Yeah, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm probably not pronouncing that right.
It's okay.
But he moves his royal court south to another city. And Genghis takes this as a breach of their agreement.
So it kind of looks like he's defecting almost.
Yeah, yeah. And then with a good portion of Jin deserters, they ended up sacking the city and burning it to the ground.
Okay, so there we go again.
So it's like, you breach, okay, like, hey, you play ball.
We'll play ball.
We can play ball, but, you know, if you pick up your ball and go home throwing a temper tantrum, I'm going to burn your house down.
I'm going to burn your house down.
So, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Burned it to the ground. And then sometime after, Genghis Khan leaves a good portion of his army behind in China and then is headed west.
Okay. It's funny, you know, you talk about him taking things so personal. There's like this meme going around about Michael Jordan mm-hmm. from The Last Dance.
Yeah.
And it just goes, it's just him with his hands up or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the subtitles are, and I took that personally.
Yeah.
Because exactly. He said that like so many
yeah,
times.
Exactly.
Like, he's like, yeah, so-and-so said that I was washed up and I couldn't play anymore. And
I took that personally.
Yeah,
exactly.
They voted Gary Payton MVP over me, and I took that personally.
Yeah.
So it's like, and then he just went on a warpath.
Yeah, so in 1219, Genghis is going west and eventually encounters the Khwarezm.
Mm-hmm.
God, these words are hard, man.
I know. They're really, they're tongue twisters.
Which is basically an empire that's in present-day Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Afghanistan, and Iran.
So he's moving west. He's moving to Middle East. Okay.
East. And then the Sultan. Words are hard, man. The Sultan of that empire had entered into a trade agreement with Genghis Khan. However, the first caravan of goods that was sent to Sultan was stolen and the merchants were killed.
Oh.
You know, no proof that it was the Sultan and his men that did this. So, in order to resolve the issue, Genghis sends his ambassadors.
Okay.
And the Sultan kills the ambassadors.
Okay, yeah, let's talk briefly about the life expectancy of an envoy back in ancient history. They all died.
It was like a 95% chance you were gonna die.
Yeah, they're like
and not just like a swift death, like you were probably gonna be tortured
for
information, you know.
I know, but how do you who's signing up for that job? I mean, really, who's signing up to be an envoy? Like, you forgot to clean out the latrine last week, so you're going to be an envoy this week, and you're probably going to die.
Well, maybe it was the opposite. Maybe the pay was good. They had full dental insurance.
I know, but you don't have enough time. There's insurance is all great if you live long enough to enjoy it.
Yeah. I mean, I would think that ambassadors back then would be put in highly trusted. It was a dangerous job, but it was also a highly trusted position. Like, you could get nearer to the king or the queen.
Right.
Or the Khan.
Right.
You know?
The Khan.
But after that, Genghis unleashes the Mongol horde.
He took that personally.
So
he unleashes the horde of the Mongol army.
The horde, and then they just end up conquering city after 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 city until this Khwarezm empire is no more.
Okay. So literally the whole empire just ends.
And it's kind of like, you know, Germans in World War II with Blitzkrieg. That's kind of like how that campaign happened. He just sends in the Mongol horde. They attack a city. And, you know, when I say that Mongols lived on their horses, they lived on their horses.
Yeah.
You know?
Incredible asset.
And there's stories of them, like, eating raw meat. And what they would do is they would take raw meat they would put it under their saddle. And as they were riding throughout the day...
Did the friction cook the meat?
The friction kind of semi-cooked. No, you can look this up.
Are you joking?
and it kind of semi-cooked the meat to where like it wasn't like really that raw anymore, and then they would eat it on horseback.
Well, still pretty rare, yeah. I would imagine.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not buying a steak from a restaurant that's, you know, yeah, it came on horseback. We used friction to cook it.
And then after that, you know, he enters Iraq, you know, besieges Baghdad,
okay.
Which was a very well-known city in the Muslim Caliphate.
Okay, right.
Yeah. And just continues to conquer and conquer and conquer.
And just conquers here, conquers there.
And along the way, they're picking up more of these. So what they would do, this kind of another brutal tactic of Genghis, is they would take the skilled workers of the city, you know, shipbuilders, engineers, scholars, doctors, even religious leaders, and he would move them throughout the empire.
Okay.
From one region to another to another. And this goes into the concept we were talking about earlier in the podcast, that he really helped connect different cultures and spread the influence of ideas.
Right. Because otherwise, these people would have never even ventured that far.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was because of Genghis and his new innovations and his new ways of doing things, the new customs. He really transported took these people all over the map.
And speaking of Baghdad and the Muslim Caliphate, is they preserved a lot of the knowledge from ancient Rome and ancient Greece.
Okay.
After the library at Alexandria burned down.
Oh.
Because the Christians there considered it heretical knowledge, and they burned it down.
Oh.
But the Muslims, you know, recovered it, and Baghdad was just considered this awesome city with, you know, vast libraries and schools, you know, that were teaching things that hadn't been taught, you know, that were being rediscovered, I should say.
So bringing back things that, that's really crazy.
Yeah.
So they're bringing back things that were long lost.
Yeah, so he would move these skilled workers around so that each portion of his empire kind of shared similar knowledge about certain things. And he globalized it. You know, he's basically, he was the first globalist.
He reaped the benefits of that globalization can have. And when you think of globalization, you know, we talked about it in like a political science class I took that I hardly remember, but you know, he's talking about globalization and how like the internet has just in social media and like phones and like transportation.
But in a way, Genghis Khan created a network
out of nothing, though.
Out of nothing.
I mean, technology speaking.
Yeah. Out of nothing, that kind of mirrors the internet. I mean, that's what the internet is, right?
The World Wide Web.
Yeah, it's just these, you know, connections. Except he was just doing it in person, you know.
Yeah.
IRL in person.
So he's like, he's like an innovator. And, you know, we talk about him conquering these nation after nation and the brutality of it all. But then you, like, look at actually... Yeah. What he's doing makes so much sense, and he's globalizing the world. He's bringing that Asian
and also spreading trade as well.
Yeah, spreading trade through the Silk Road.
Yeah, and influencing trade.
Right,
but yeah, he besieges Baghdad, and again, like one of the tactics that they would use is they would take all the unskilled workers and all the enemy soldiers, and they would line them up as human shields.
Okay.
And then lead them to take the brunt of the arrows and missiles that were flying toward them.
Okay.
And the siege of Baghdad took place in 1258.
Okay, so we got another quote from Genghis that actually rings to that. Thing that Jake just said about, you know, using the unskilled worker. He utilized everybody, and if he didn't have a use, he was going to make a use out of you whether it was,
yeah,
you know, spreading your influence or using you in the army in an unfortunate way,
yeah,
to say the least. I wouldn't want to be a human shield. But so here's a quote that I dug up. "Those who were adept and brave fellows, I have made military commanders. Those who were quick and nimble, I have made herders of horses. Those who were not adept, I have given a small whip and sent to be shepherds." You know, doesn't mention the human shields thing in here, but, but, you know, the point is he made use of everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, obviously.
Correction, the Mongols besieged Baghdad in 1258, because Genghis died in 1227.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So this was after him.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they continued that tradition that Genghis, you know, of utilizing, you know, enemy. And then another famous example after his death, a tactic that they would use was in the Mongols were on campaign in 1346, besieging the city of Kaffa on the Crimean Peninsula,
mm-hmm.
which was on the coast of the Black Sea.
Okay.
And by this time, the bubonic plague was going on.
Yeah.
And what they did was they took plague-infected bodies and, you know, heads, limbs, put them in their catapults and launched them over the walls of the city. And this is the first recorded use of biological warfare.
Like, get out of town.
Yeah. In the world.
That's absolutely insane.
And, you know.
And I mean, man, that is messed up.
So when Genghis was alive, his empire stretched from the Sea of Japan to the Caspian Sea. Mm-hmm. But after his death, it would continue to expand. And at the height of the Mongol Empire, it covered 9 million square miles, stretching from the Pacific Ocean to the Danube River in Eastern Europe.
My word.
That's a good chunk of territory.
That's a chunk of land, I'll tell you what. That's quite a lot of square footage there.
That's prime real estate right there.
That's prime real estate there, pal. So we've done the synopsis, Jake, and if you don't mind, I'd like, you know, we talked a little bit about the brutality of the Mongols, and, you know, I mean,
but
I guess
there was also stuff that he did, you know, introducing these customs and these laws that, you know, like you were saying, probably anybody would agree with.
Yeah.
But he also united many of these empires through and brought peace and stability.
Yeah.
You know, later on, his grandson Kublai Khan came to power, and he did some significant things. He introduced a paper money system, and
so like a currency. They have a currency now.
But the Mongols did such a good job at protecting trade routes, especially the Silk Road.
Yeah,
because imagine the Silk Road is the only thing that's connecting east to west.
Yeah, and you know, the Silk Road, just for people who don't know what the Silk Road was, it was established way before Genghis Khan, and mm-hmm. it was a series of trading routes through, yeah. I mean, it's amazing. Like, it was a series of trading routes throughout all of Asia in the ancient world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously they traded silk, you know, and mm-hmm. a bunch of other things. It was really known for, you know, material trade.
Yeah.
And then Genghis comes along and the Mongols, and they conquer the areas around the Silk Road, mm-hmm. and now it's not only used for trade, it's used for the spread of ideas.
Yeah.
And the spread of ideologies. Yeah.
And you can imagine, like, with any trade route, it's going to be a target for bandits.
Right.
So you kind of have to be on your guard. But the Mongols provided protection.
Right.
And it's said that you could walk from one end of the Mongol Empire to the other end of the Mongol Empire with a gold plate on your head, and nobody would harass you or try to steal from you.
Like,
because it's that reputation of terror that they carried.
I know, but then you it's paired with like the peace.
The
like,
peace.
All of
yeah.
a sudden, all this peace that he brings to his empire,
yeah.
you know, and it's kind of like it really like I've been battling with it all week. Like every time I read something about it, I'm like, well, man, like one moment I'm like, dang, this guy was terrible. This guy was horrible. And then the next minute I'm like, well, he was actually the unification and the peace that came with the Mongol Empire paired with the terror and brutality that other nations were victim to is really mind-blowing.
Yeah. And, you know, Kublai, Genghis's grandson, would try to expand the empire. Well, first he ended up conquering the Song Dynasty in southern China, which had held out for a long time against the Mongols.
Right.
Probably because Genghis was away at the time.
Yeah.
And they put up fierce resistance. But he eventually conquered southern China and then tried to invade Japan.
Okay. Yeah, let's talk about that.
Which, I mean, if you're familiar with the game Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah. Game just came out.
Yeah.
Pretty brutal, too.
Pretty brutal,
I might say.
Yeah. And tries to conquer Japan, you know, as the next campaign, but, you know, they met stiff Japanese resistance.
From the ancient samurai.
Yeah.
Fending them off. It's amazing.
Yeah. And basically, we talk about the Mongol Empire, they were invincible on land, but they were not a sea people.
Yeah.
Now, they did their best. They would, you know, get from, like, Persia. Or the Arabian, you know, Persia, around there, they would get shipbuilders to come in and build ships for them. But it was, like, a series of, like, stiff Japanese resistance because the Japanese were great. They were great. They're on an island. They're great seafaring people.
Right.
Number one. But number two, there was a series. He tried to launch a couple of campaigns, but then there was like a series of typhoons that just wiped them out.
Right, right.
And he never...
Never conquered Japan.
Never conquered Japan.
I mean...
So, I mean, the reason why that's significant is it officially ended the Mongols...
Expansion
or reputation of invincibility.
Yeah, because up until that point, they were just knocking people out left and right, and then they meet Buster Douglas and get dropped.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Shout out to Buster Douglas, Columbus, Ohio native.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he still runs a gym.
He still runs a gym.
Ohio. Yeah. I don't know what he's doing now.
Yeah.
But eventually, Genghis dies in China, and... You know, that's the end of him. But nobody knows where his tomb is. He requested to be buried in Mongolia, but nobody knows where his tomb is.
Yeah, and that's...
It was super secret. So, you know, they had like a caravan of soldiers, and then they had the navigators to lead them to this super secret spot. And the soldiers killed the navigators.
Right.
To keep it hush-hush. You know,
so they buried him, and the people who tried to find him got killed, and then
they buried him, and then the soldiers marching back, and then they got killed, and it was just kind of try to keep it secret.
Wow.
And like I said at the beginning of the podcast, shortly after his death, the secret history of the Mongols is released on bookshelves.
Barnes & Noble, Amazon, wherever you read your books.
Across the empire. And
I heard they made it into the first Audible tape.
Oh, yeah.
An 8-track recorder.
Oh, yeah. They were super, super advanced, man.
Super advanced.
Yeah.
So, you know, top seller.
Yeah, top seller.
Just flying off the shelves.
But, I mean, well, it just, the Mongols didn't really write a whole lot of stuff down or keep specific records.
But
this was
like
the first attempt to do so.
To kind of like preserve some of that tradition and culture that they had in that history, you know? I'd actually like to read it one day. I don't know if they make copies of it or translated it.
All right, now we're introducing a new segment. We started the podcast off with an icebreaker, but now we're going to end with burning questions.
Burning questions.
Fire emoji.
Fire emoji. Fire emoji. So burning questions is a new segment we're starting, and basically it's a series of questions where Jake and I, they're completely open-ended, opinionated, there's no right or wrong answer, and they're kind of fun to bounce off. So let's go to the burning questions, and let's start out with, was Genghis too brutal? What do you think?
I mean, he lived in a brutal time.
That's a good point.
He lived in a brutal time. But he was only brutal when, you know, his enemies forced his hand.
Right.
He would always try to be peaceful first, you know, establish trade first. Yeah. You know, much like how Alexander, you tried to use diplomacy.
Right.
You know, to conquer before. But he only used violence as a means to an end.
Right.
You know, he wasn't like Caligula that just would kill people and
like a maniac, you
laugh
know?
And like he was like, yeah, no,
yeah.
I mean, the Mongols did during their wars and campaigns, they did kill a lot of people,
yeah,
but it was like always a means to an end, expanding the empire, influencing trade, things yeah. like that.
There was a method.
I mean, he
madness.
Was brutal, but I don't think he was too brutal.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the Mongols can get a bad rep. I mean, that's a great point, you know, because you brought up Caligula, the Roman emperor. I mean, there were so many other empires and so many other countries and civilizations that were way more brutal than the Mongols.
Yeah.
You know, the Mongols were not the, he was a brutal guy. I mean, today's standards, he'd be, you know, arrest, definitely put on, put to death. But
there would definitely be some war crimes to answer.
There would definitely be some questions to answer. But
if the Geneva Convention was, you know, a thing back then, they would have broken every law, like a million times over.
A million times over. And you know, we talk about the Mongols, and in the beginning, you know, talking about the very beginning. What do you think of when you think about the Mongols? Oh, they're brutal. Oh, this and that. Mulan.
Yeah.
You know, and the reality is there were way more other countries and civilizations that were way more brutal. I mean, mm-hmm. I remember learning about the Aztecs, you know. There are people that had some weird stuff going on, you know. I mean, you're going to the top of the temple, chop off someone's head and watch it roll down the steps. I mean, like, there's some pretty messed up stuff that happened back then. You know, we were... I was at Shayla's, my wife, shout out to Shayla.
Shayla. We love you, Shayla.
We love you, Shayla. And, you know, we were at her parents' house this weekend, and, you know, we wanted to watch kind of like a family fun movie and stuff. And John and I, her stepdad, had on like a Cleopatra documentary.
Hmm.
And it became very apparent that it was not a way to spend a family evening to watch Cleopatra and all the brutal things that happened in her life, you know? So, I mean, talk about brutality, you know, don't just point it at Genghis.
Okay. Now we got another question here. Between Genghis Khan, Alexander the Great, Hannibal, and Napoleon, who do you think was the greatest conqueror out of just those?
Here's my take on that.
Okay.
Okay.
Go for it.
Having all things considered, recording all the podcasts, I know maybe I'm biased right now because we're talking about him, but Genghis Khan, I mean, I think he was the greatest conqueror who ever lived, not just because he conquered so much land, but also Napoleon, he was kind of in it for himself, very Machiavelli-like, very sinister. Hannibal, he had his own personal vendetta with Rome, and Alexander the Great was kind of on a power trip, it seemed.
Yeah.
I mean, like, these are all just my opinion, but, like, just based off what we've talked about, you know, Alexander the Great, you know, is about spreading Greek culture, which was kind of similar to Mongolia, but, I mean, Genghis Khan, I mean, I just think he was way ahead of his time with the whole interconnectedness of his empire and utilizing every resource and everything, really. So...
Yeah.
That's what I got.
I would say Alexander the Great.
Okay. I don't disagree.
Yeah, I would say Alexander the Great because he was kind of the first to carve out a, well, not the first, but I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, when we're talking about Genghis Khan, you know, and the Mongols, you know, and maybe it's because they were a nomadic people, but, you know, to even dare to go to some of the places that they went to,
right,
that are, you know, thousands of miles away from their birthplace of origin.
Right.
I think Alexander the Great was the first to do that, to kind of push his men towards the edge of the unknown.
And yeah, push, that's a good way to put
and
it.
And even push further than that.
Yeah. And both of them were so loyal to their men, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, both of them were, they were in the thick of it with them, you know? If you don't mind, I just want to read, it reminds me of another quote that I found of Genghis Khan that I thought was really interesting. Just bear with me here. Let's see. Where does he talk about his... All right, I can't find
it. Oh, by the way, side note, rest in peace, Alex Trebek.
Rest in peace to Alex Trebek, the legend. I can't find it, but he basically was saying, maybe this is it. This is an interesting one. Heaven grew weary of the excessive pride and luxury of China. I am from the barbaric north. I wear the same clothing and eat the same food as the cowherds and horse herders. We make the same sacrifices and we share our riches. I look upon the nation as a newborn child and I care for my soldiers as though they were my brothers.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it brought a tear to my eye. I don't know about you.
Well, it's to mention Sun Tzu, you know, one of his famous quotes was, treat your soldiers as if they were your own sons, and they will follow you into the deepest valley.
Yeah. And even his old buddy,
Jamuka.
Ooh, I want to take it. Now, so Jamuka, I mean, he turned his back on Genghis, and still he was like, hey, you know, yeah, at the end of the day, we're both Mongols and we're both blood brothers.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you one last shot.
And then, even though, you know, Jamuka refused...
Yeah, he's still honored.
Genghis still honored him by giving him the death that he wanted.
That he wanted. And that's something that, you know, obviously who wants to have their back broken? But but back then, that was a very honoring thing. So, yeah. I mean, he did. It's crazy. You brought up a great point the other day, Jake, about talking about comparing the Mongol Empire to almost like a criminal mafia syndicate, you know, like, because the mafia had their own weird moral code that was, it was cool. It was like morally okay. I don't really know how to explain it, but like, they had their own moral beliefs and they had their own ways of dealing with rats, and they had their own things that really disrespected them, you know? And I just think that that's just a really interesting way to think about Genghis Khan, because he had his own interesting thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He had his own interesting thing, his own custom. He literally created his own customs.
Exactly. So anyway, moving on to the next question. Let's go rapid fire here. What do you got?
We can do one last question, I think.
One last question?
Yeah.
All right.
It's kind of been a long podcast.
One last question. Hit it. What you got?
Okay, would you consider Genghis Khan a barbarian or an innovator? Or both?
Good question. I don't know. I think at times, I feel like conquerors at times have to be both.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you have to you have to turn into an animal
yeah,
and have people like fear you. But at the same time, you got to be an innovator. You have to have a vision. You have to be going somewhere. You can't just be a barbarian and just conquer and kill people. Like, you, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I'm obviously, I don't want anyone to think that I'm like a, that I'm like, you know, get super hyped up about, you know, war or anything. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not like a war guy, but I'm just saying, like, from like a barbarian and innovator, I mean, I think he was more of an innovator, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, especially when we talk about him, you know, we talk about his utilization of the Silk Road and all the mm-hmm. skilled workers, and nobody was doing that before, you know? So
I would, yeah, I'd say he's a bit of both. You know, as far as like, because when we think of like the term barbarian just means different.
Yeah.
You know, he was just, he was different.
Yeah.
In a good way, in a positive way.
Right.
And because of that, you know, he created his own customs and laws. I mean,
right.
You know, he was even revolutionary among the other Mongol tribes.
Right.
On the Asian steppe. You right. know, choosing to give people positions of power based on skill and loyalty.
Yeah, nobody did that.
Rather than just be like, oh, this is my brother, and how about you lead the army?
Yeah, kind of like a CEO giving his son like the best salary job yeah. just because he's his son.
Yeah.
You know, and not because someone actually more yeah. adept or equipped to handle the job.
But so anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to sign off.
Yeah.
Hope you learned something.
Definitely.
As always, we encourage you to do your own research. A couple of times in the podcast, I stumbled.
Yeah, I mean, even you know, you look at the History Channel's website, I mean, there's a disclaimer like, hey, you know, if yeah. you've seen something that's inaccurate, you know, yeah. please let us know or whatever. You
yeah,
know, so hopefully this kind of sparked your interest in Genghis Khan and the Mongolian mm-hmm. Empire like it did us, and
yeah.
inspires you to look into it more. And if you want to look at our entire episode history, we've got about five only right now, but they're mm-hmm. all on the Low Bros History Podcast.buzzsprout.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Low, L-O-E. So yeah. the Low Bros History Podcast.buzzsprout.com.
And Buzzsprout is, from what our experience, has just been the go-to for
yeah.
us. They really make it simple for you, make it easy to start a podcast. You can mm-hmm. get recognized on all the different.
Yeah. You get recognized in all the different directories. They make it super easy to get monetized, and mm-hmm. they got all kinds of different blogs and resources you can look at mm-hmm. on how to make your audio better, how to, you know, just provide more value to, you know, your yeah. listeners and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And anybody who's got an idea about anything, I would highly consider starting a podcast. You know, just let your ideas be heard.
Yeah.
And
don't be afraid to you know, just hit record and
yeah.
you know, and then just don't be afraid to post.
Yeah.
Either.
And, you know, it, and also if you do, there is a link to Buzzsprout in our in the details of this episode. So you can just click that link and that'll enable you to sign up. They have free plans mm-hmm. too. So highly encourage you to do that. And if you want to support the show, there's also a link in the details. PayPal link that you can support the show. We appreciate, really just appreciate anybody who all of the listeners and
mm-hmm.
everyone who's been on us with this journey. And so with that, we just want to say thank you, and we're signing off. This is the Low Bros History Podcast. Jake, sign us off.
Yeah, I'm Jacob Lowe.
And I'm Henry Lowe. Thank you for listening.
We'll fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall go on to the end. Until in God's good time. 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 We shall go on to the end. Until in God's good time. We shall go on to the end. Until in God's good time.